Hello and welcome to this episode of Democracy in Action with me, Sunny Martin. We are coming to you live from Juba. And today's topic here is restoring public trust, strengthening accountability and transparency in South Sudan. That's what we are going to be discussing today on this episode of Democracy in Action. And later on, our lines will be open to you, where you can participate via our numbers 0912067879 or 0912067929. Or you can also send us your comment to our SMS number 0912177141. Those are all our lines. You can get in touch with us here and ask my two guests who are already with me here. Like I just said, our discussion is going to be focusing on restoring public trust by strengthening accountability and transparency under the rule of law. The 2011 Transitional Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan provides for a separation of powers, public financial accountability, and the protection of fundamental rights. However, concerns over corruption, weak enforcement of rule of law, and limited transparency in public financial management continues to affect many citizens' confidence in public institutions. Restoring trust requires a stronger oversight, judiciary independence, and transparency. So, I'm joined here in the studio to discuss all this. I am joined by Independent Advocate John Gerry. Good morning and welcome to Redi Mirai.
Good morning to you. Thank you so much for hosting us. And I also would like to say good morning to the listeners of Radio Mirai.
Okay. And also I am joined here by Yinpiu Madid, who is the Rule of Law Officer with the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, Juba headquarters. You are most welcome once again to Redi Mirai.
Thank you so much, Sunny Martin, and good morning to the people of South Sudan across the country.
Okay, and right away, let's begin with Advocate John. Public trust in many government offices in the country appears to be at its lowest. In your own view, what are the main drivers of this mistrust between the citizens and the public offices in this country?
Sunny, once again, I would like to say thank you for convening this session. The topic is very important because it centers around the strength and effectiveness of our Constitution. You know, Article 48.1d of our Transitional Constitution declares that peace, socioeconomic development and political stability is attainable if the government pursues good governance through democracy, separation of powers, transparency, accountability, and respect for the rule of law. That is what our Constitution said. But more importantly, our 2011 Transitional Constitution is called, a Transitional Constitution, meaning it was a roadmap towards the establishment of our democratic nation, which is the vision of the people of South Sudan. But since 2011, sadly, this roadmap is now 25 years old and still ongoing. Otherwise, by now, we'll be 20 years plus in democracy, separation of powers, transparency, accountability, and respect for the rule of law. But still there is hope because a roadmap cannot be indefinite. That is why there are ongoing discussions about election and formulation of a rigid constitution, something people call a permanent constitution. Regardless, the current constitution contains some basic democratic norms, which include the accountability of public officials and transparency, which is our topic for today.
Okay. Madid, ANMIS has been doing a lot, working in partnership with the judiciary and other government institutions in this country to build their own capacity. How are you supporting, for example, the judiciary to ensure that they are independent so that they can try cases that can restore public trust in this country?
Thank you so much, Sani, for this question. With regard to the judiciary, I think it's important to highlight that, my colleague John Gary said, we are talking about a democratic system of governance whereby we have three arms of government, and judiciary is one of the most important arms because of the key role that the judiciary plays in addressing disputes among the citizens and also between the citizens and the government institutions. So with regard to the role that ADMIS plays, basically you understand that under the current revitalized peace agreement, there is specific provisions dedicated to reform the judiciary. So it's not only ANMIS, but generally the United Nations as one system had worked closely with the then Judicial Committee Review Commission to pinpoint areas where the judiciary requires to be reformed, at least for the interests of the people of South Sudan. And that process has been completed and the report is out. So now the next move is to see how can this document be, you know, translated into a reality. Last year in June, we worked closely with the leadership of the judiciary for the strategic plan. But in the short term, areas where the people of South Sudan are in need of judicial services, the rule of law within ANMIS has been working closely with the judiciary to deploy judges to remote areas where we don't have presence of judges, to dispense justice and to address backlog of cases. So this is more of short-term intervention, but on the long run, we are really focusing on making sure that the Judicial Reform Committee report is actually implemented, not only by the judiciary, but the different stakeholders under the leadership of the Ministry of Justice, which is the lead institution so far.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Advocate Gary, what are the practical rule of law measures that can bridge the gap between the legal framework and the real accountability to restore public confidence in the state institutions across the country?
To answer this question properly, I think we need to revisit the past and check whether any conduct in the past was better than now. And in my opinion, the period between 2012 and 2013 had some better ratings in terms of transparency and in government. Government appointees, if I can recall, during this period were subjected to a normal democratic process, something called parliamentary vetting and approval. It was also mandatory for them to declare their wealth and were as well restricted from doing a private business. Those were very important constitutional provisions by then. Whatever title each one holds, the truth is that government is run by humans, and they are good and bad humans, you know. The bad humans are those with criminal records, corrupt history, and among other things, dishonesty and the rest. The Constitution does not want this kind of people in government positions. That is why the Constitution gave the Parliament the power to vet and approve appointments made by the executive branch. Those who are in 2012 and 2013, Parliament, have been exercising these powers. People were filtered out and, you know, the vetting process by the Parliament before they were sworn in. To explain this one further, vetting is quite similar to a job interview whereby someone is subjected to questions.
But we have not seen that happening in the country.
It happened some time back in 2012 and 2013.
In the Parliament.
And I think the reason why we now have a public mistrust because this important
should that be one of the key component? Should that be one of the key component for appointing someone so that he or she should go through a process where she or he is scrutinized, vetted, and he is checked before assuming offices?
Yes. Without doubt, that is the law. Mm-hmm. That is what the Constitution said. Each appointee have to go through this process of vetting by Parliament. and they are supposed to be scrutinized just like normal interview, as I said. And finally, when they pass through, and they have to declare their wealth, and
is
they are also restricted
from... Is it
there
in the law?
Yes, it is.
Why
in the constitution.
Why is it not being implemented?
I don't have answer for that.
Yeah.
I don't have answer for that. I cannot speak on behalf of the parliament. But that's a very important power to be exercised by parliament, because we cannot let the door open to everyone to, you know, occupy government positions and check. We need to know their background, because when we allow, you know, random access to power like this, and there is a big problem with transparency and accountability.
Yes, Madit, just like what Advocate John have just mentioned, that we have not seen vetting happening. But now, the 2011 interim constitution at least guarantee accountability and transparency. Where is the biggest gap between the law and the practice?
Yeah, thank you once again. I think the biggest challenge, to be honest, is not the law or the implementation of the law, but it's the political reality in the country. You understand that you are going through a transitional, you know, period whereby even the government institutions, they are, you know, legal, okay, so to speak, but there is a question of legitimacy in terms of how do they deliver the services to the people. For example, I give you an example of the transitional legislative assembly. It's an institution with an oversight, you know, role over the executive in terms of compliance with the constitution and the laws. But the composition of the current legislative assembly raises a lot of concerns, you know, among the citizens because of the loyalty to their political parties more than the public good. So this can be one of the reasons as to why the constitutional provisions and even the laws are not being well, you know, adhered to, because the oversight institutions lack the legitimacy in terms of them being able to deliver the services. And also when you look at the issue of also civic space, okay, you want an accountable government, but what space did you give to the people for them to express, to give feedback in terms of what you are doing? So these are some of the things that really need to be, you know, to be looked at. If you look at the independent commissions in this country, and for me, I am deeply interested in the Human Rights Commission and Anti-Corruption Commission. These two commissions are not legally empowered enough. For example, in other jurisdictions, you will see the Anti-Corruption Commission investigating and also taking, you know, cases to court. Mm-hmm. But in the context of South Sudan, they only investigate and report to the very, you know, executive. So the executive will now decide whether to take this case to court or not. So these are issues to do with legal framework and also making sure that the institutions themselves, they go beyond just we are legally, you know, established to legitimacy, to the legitimacy question in terms of delivering up to the expectation of the people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Advocate Gary, in this case right now, do you believe that reforms are very much needed to ensure that we have a body that is capable of fighting corruption and also monitoring public financial management?
Yeah, I believe so. Reform is critical at the moment. And as we have mentioned earlier, the two provisions of the Constitution requiring the vetting process and the declaration of assets, those ones have been silent, has not been practiced for quite some time. The language we use in South Sudan, revitalization, I think, they too need to be revitalized. Mm. And additionally, I think reform need to be considered in some areas. One important aspect, you see our criminal law is effective, but not to a certain level. You may find that citizens will argue that the law normally targets only the ordinary or the weak or the poor citizens. That is largely correct because if you see the nature of certain offices that we have, like the Department of Public Prosecution, in certain countries, this office is independent. What I mean is, It is directly supervised by Parliament, and even appointment process is scrutinized by the Parliament. I believe if we have this one, we will see some level of independence in that office, and possibly may have the courage even to take corrupt cases maybe to court. I believe a reform is important in this area, and also the anti-corruption needs to be empowered because everyone can see they have gone silent. We don't hear from them anymore. Last time I heard, they were having issues with rent, and I believe they need to be straightened, whether financially or any other means for them to enable to execute their duties.
Yes, if you have just joined us right now, you are listening to Democracy in Action with me, Stanley Martin, and I have two guests here in the studio as we are discussing restoring public trust, strengthening accountability and transparency in South Sudan. I have with me in the studio independent advocate John Gerry, who is an independent lawyer, and Yin Pew Madit is a rule of law officer with ANMIS here in Juba. If you have got any question, please you can share with us via our lines 0912067879 or 0912067929, or you can send us your comment to our SMS number 0912177141 and be part of our discussion right here. Yes, before our lines are opening, are open to you shortly, I would like to find out from you, Madit, how can the judicial independence and the consistent enforcement of anti-corruption law contribute to rebuilding public trust? Because you said these two, the human right and the anti-corruption commission, need to be empowered so that at least they can take the bull by the horn.
Thank you once again. I think for me, what matters, to be honest, when it comes to building trust, is how the institutions respond to issues of concern. For example, when you look at criminal cases that are being dispensed by the judiciary, the narrative or the thinking of the ordinary citizen is that there is a problem of fairness in the process. For example, the social status of the person who is appearing before the court, the economic situation, the political status. So if we are applying the laws fairly without any discrimination, then you will start seeing people trusting the institution in terms of the mandate and also the legitimacy. Also, like I said earlier, if we are able to empower the Anti-Corruption Commission, for example, every citizen in this country knows that there are cases of corruption. But the wonder is how is this institution able to enforce its mandate and to hold these people accountable? So again, it's about them delivering. And if that thing is not happening, then people will not have trust in the institution. And the same thing applies to the Human Rights Commission. All of us, we talk about basic, violations of human rights. For example, Nyin Pew committed a crime, maybe my younger brother will be detained. So the question is, how are we documenting, reporting, and holding people accountable? So the bottom line is that people will only trust the institutions when the institutions are responsive enough, protecting lives and properties. But if it is just something in the laws, it is just a narrative being said, but on the ground it is not happening, people will not trust the institutions. Even you at the family level, when you say things and you are not implementing, family members will not trust you as a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, we have a couple of SMS coming in here in regard to the question of vetting. This is coming in from Dennis, and Dennis is writing from Tomping here in Juba. And he says, my question is going to Advocate Gerry. And he says, how can vetting reduce corruption within public institutions? That's from Dennis asking, how can vetting reduce corruption within public institutions? Another one here is saying, What role does the South Sudan Anti-Corruption Commission play in screening or investigating officials? That's from Deng in Moniki here in Juba. You have not directed the question to any person. Jackson in Juba is also asking Advocate Gary. He says, are asset declaration mandatory for senior officials? And if so, are they publicly accessible? Should anyone who is aspiring to be a DG in the ministry of any ministry, for example, finance or petroleum, should I declare my assets before I assume that post to avoid corruption? And if I make my quick money, at least I can be held accountable. This is from Jackson here, going to Advocate Gary. Yes, let's begin with you, those questions.
The first question from Dennis. Mm-hmm. Can you help me with the question again?
Yes, he was asking about can vetting reduce corruption?
Yes.
Yeah, in public institutions.
Definitely. When there is a vetting process, it means that there is transparency and the opportunity for bribery, embezzlement, nepotism, tribalism, even incompetency, mm-hmm. Is significantly reduced. It also shows that the government is trustworthy and has nothing to hide. Mm. Also, it means there is accountability and public officials will fear being prosecuted, because when you know you're not incompetent and you lie to parliament, there would be consequences. Mm. Just like in I said earlier, in a job interview. So when you lie, later on you will lose your job. Mm-hmm. So that's important.
If you say I speak French,
yes,
and one day I am hired and somebody is brought into who speaks French, I'm told to come and translate.
Precisely.
It becomes difficult.
And later when you're caught, you will lose that position.
Yeah.
So transparency is actually important, and it improves the governance system in general, mm, and give a way to good governance in the country.
Okay. And there was this question, maybe Madid, you can answer, you can give your comment about, you already talked about it earlier, about the role of the South Sudan Anti-Corruption Commission. What role do they play in screening or investigating officials in this country?
Yeah, I think one of the points that our listeners should also take note of is that when you read chapter 4 of the Revitalized Peace Agreement, it talks about these issues of, you know, economic resource management and so forth. So there are institutions that have been specifically mentioned that should be subjected to some reforms, mm-hmm, and also some laws. So the Anti-Corruption Act of South Sudan, okay, is one of the laws that has to be, you know, to be amended in a way that we give more powers to this institution, because we cannot argue that the Anti-Corruption Commission is ineffective in terms of, you know, the process of ensuring these public officials who are appointed are held accountable unless we read the legal framework. So at the end of the day, if they have this mandate and they are not doing it, then it brings us to the argument that I made earlier, that the legitimacy of the Anti-Corruption Commission as an institution is questionable by the people. Yes, you have the law, but you are not fulfilling your mandate. But if they don't have power to specifically investigate and prosecute, then the blame may shift to a different institution that has that mandate. Mm. To the best of my knowledge, currently the Anti-Corruption Commission is legally empowered to investigate. But whether they are doing that or not, to be honest, it's something that maybe it will come under recommendations earlier.
Okay.
Yes.
And the question here, it was just left open, the issue of asset declaration.
From Jackson.
Yes. And we saw this sometimes back. There was an order for all the government officials to declare their assets.
It is indeed in the Constitution.
Yeah.
That provision is there.
Yeah. So he says, should that be mandatory?
Yeah, that one is mandatory because it's
it exists. But why is it why is it not happening?
Like I said earlier,
the implementation of the law.
Yes.
Okay.
But that is a provision in the constitution. With regards to disclosure of this information, the constitution mentioned clearly that it should be kept confidential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it cannot be disclosed to the public.
All right. Okay. Let me twist the question of Jackson here. If public officials are allowed to declare their assets, how will it help restore trust building in the public institution among the citizens? Because they will look at me as somebody who's transparent, and if I make quick money, people will so know that, oh, when you came, you had so much, but now you have acquired a lot beyond your own salary, which is stipulated in the law. How does it help fight corruption?
This one helps fight corruption in several ways, but the main tool why this is there is to at least put a safeguard that people may not abuse their powers while in government. Why I say so, because once you declare your assets and your salary is known, and abruptly there is a, you know, appearance in a certain increase in your wealth and the rest, that could be basis for prosecution.
Mm.
You know, prosecution is evidence-based, so that one will likely remain as evidence to initiate prosecutions.
Makeri is asking Madid, and says my question is going to Madid. He says, what role does access to information play in promoting transparency and accountability? Because he mentioned earlier on that the issue of civic space is very important in this country.
Yeah, thank you so much for this question. You know, access to information is constitutionally, you know, provided for under our current constitution. So as citizens of the country and also the media, the government is, you know, required by the constitution to avail information that are important to the people for them to be able to make an informed decision. So if the public authority is open to the public, okay, you will reduce even the risk of misinformation and disinformation. But if the institution operates like in a secret, you know, way, then the social media, like what we are seeing nowadays, you see a lot of misinformation and disinformation, a lot of assumption about things that are not even happening within that particular institution. For example, and that brings me to the point that there is always a need from the public institutions to communicate, you know, with the people. Many people in our country, they don't know what, for example, the Ministry of Justice does, okay, and how it is done, okay, what are the results and what are the challenges. So it is important to open up, okay, for the people to give a feedback, a critical feedback that will, you know, help enhance transparency and build trust between the people and the institution. But if information is not revealed, which is required by the Constitution, not all the information, but at least information that affects, you know, the day-to-day life of the citizen, then the citizen will be assuming, and you will not have a responsible kind of engagement between the citizen and the institutions, because there is an information gap. So it's important to reduce, you know, misinformation and disinformation by being, you know, transparent as institution.
Right. And if you have just joined us right now, you're listening to Democracy in Action with me, Sunny Martin, and I have two of my guests here with me in the studio as we discuss restoring public trust, strengthening accountability and transparency in South Sudan. And I have John Gerry, who is an independent lawyer, NPO, Madid, rule of law officer with Anne Messia in Juba. Our lines are still open. You can call us on 091206-7879 or do send us your comment to our SMS number 091-2177-141.
In our village, the airstrip is part of daily life, but danger can come at any moment.
My cow is still on the runway. The plane is coming.
Move away from the strip now. Take the cattle off.
A landing aircraft cannot stop. If you are on the runway, you can seriously be harmed. Animals can be lost in seconds.
Thank you. People of the village, you help keep everyone safe today.
When we keep the runway clear, we protect our children, our cattle, and our future. Aircraft bring food, medicine, and emergency help.
Runway is for planes only. Clear runway. Save community. Protect life. Protect cattle.
Safety is everyone's business. This message is brought to you by the aviation section of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan.
Yes, and welcome back. My name is Sunny Martin, and we are discussing restoring public trust, strengthening accountability and transparency in South Sudan during this episode of Democracy in Action that comes to you every Thursday. And we have in the studio independent advocate John Gerry, Yinpiu Madid, rule of law officer, and our lines are now open. You can call us. We have a lot of interesting questions coming in via our SMS number. And this one says, my name is Kur from Sukjuba. I am sending my question to Advocate John. And he says, what are some of the immediate reforms as a lawyer you would recommend or that will signal a genuine political will to fight corruption in South Sudan? As a lawyer, what immediate reforms would signal genuine political will to fight corruption in South Sudan? That's from Sukjuba and from Kur. And another question here is saying, how can citizens be more directly involved in monitoring public spending and government performance? Yes, these are two questions, and let's begin with Advocate John.
Tukur?
Yeah.
It's not alone. I think majority of South Sudanese need to see reform. Mm. And sadly, reforms cannot be done immediately, as he suggested. There are a number of processes where, you know, certain reforms can be done, including debate in parliament and finally approval by the House. But I believe there are certain reforms that can be rushed, including the enforcement of the existing laws. I believe this can build trust in the meantime because there are a number of good provisions in the constitutions which remain silent up to now, like the two I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
They really need to be implemented. These are kind of urgent interventions that maybe are required now. For comprehensive reform, we already have some initiatives that are already meant to, you know, to reform certain aspects of the governance in the country, including the judicial reform report. I think it came out last year.
Mm-hmm.
There is timeline for it, supposed to be implemented. The governance cluster has been silent for some time, but I believe it is now fully constituted, which is headed by the Vice President, Nyandeng. I think they need to take lead in that and have that judicial reform report table before Parliament for at least consideration.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, before we go to the involvement of the citizen, the same question is coming in from Makoi. I think people are much interested in the same reforms. And this one is saying, my name is Makoi. I'm writing from Awil in Northern Baragazal State. And he says, I will still want to know what concrete steps should be taken to restore public trust in government institution and ensure that we have people held accountable at all levels of government. This is from Makoi in Awil, Northern Barra, Gaza State. Yes, Madit, you want to come in?
Yeah, thank you. I think it goes back to what, you know, my land colleague Gary has been saying. It is the aspiration of the people. We want to see, you know, a functioning institutions that delivers, you know, the expectation. But again, it goes back to the reforms, to be honest, because the document that is now part of the transitional constitution is the revitalized peace agreement. There is a chapter on reforming the economic sector. There is the judiciary we talked about. Mm-hmm. And also there is the security sector institutions. So if we believe that these institutions are yet to meet our expectations, the reality is that we are going through a transition because of 2013, 2016. So it goes back to the leaders of the country in terms of how we actualize the provisions in the peace agreement. If we are to reform the judiciary, like we said, then definitely it will, you know, it will deliver to the expectations of the people. If we are to reform the security institutions, also that will happen, because that is the roadmap. But it's a process. It's a long process. It's a painful process, but it requires a political will. The appointees in these institutions are not necessarily policymakers. These are more of implementers. They are implementing. But the direction comes from the leadership, the political leadership of the country. For the judiciary to deliver, for example, you need money. And you remember when we had a conversation around the strategic plan of the judiciary.
Yeah.
The judiciary is aspiring to be even present at the Payam level.
Mm-hmm.
But you need money. Okay, we want to increase the number of judges. We need money. So these are things, these are interconnected kind of conversations. It's not only one institution that will reform itself.
Yeah. And the role of citizens in... he says, how can citizens be more directly involved in monitoring public spending and government performance? Yes, Advocate Gary. as we conclude.
Thank you. When there is a proactive disclosure of public information, including policies, budgets and expenditures, public procurement contracts, and among others, including reports, it means citizens are actively participating. But how do they get these reports? You know, much of these institutions are required by law to make disclosures. But certain institutions, they are required to make these disclosures to Parliament only.
Mm.
And Parliament are the representative of the people. Although in our situation, a majority of them are appointed by their political parties, but they are there to serve public interests. They are supposed to, you know, push the institutions to disclose information, because information is key to the public. It is the public or the people of South Sudan that has entrusted governance to the representative in Parliament and even in the executive. So they have a right to know what their people are doing there in the government.
Okay.
It's their government, by the way.
Okay. And finally, just in a minute, Advocate Gary, if you are to recommend some key immediate reforms to the government bodies concerned in terms of restoring public trust, what will they be?
As a majority of South Sudanese, I'm one of them. I aspire to see zero tolerance of corruption in the country. And with that, we require that the report of the judicial committee should be at least implemented immediately.
Okay.
Yeah, that one should be expedited to finality. That is one. And then two, there should be discipline in government expenditure. And yeah, that is key.
Okay. Yes, Madit, finally.
For me, I will say, building on what Mulana Gary said, is just transparency in terms of information. An institution is required by the law and the constitution to be open to the public, because public officials are appointed by the people, okay, and these institutions are owned by the people. So there is nothing that you are doing there that is secret. For the information to be available, you are actually empowering citizens to participate in decision-making processes. But if there is no transparency in terms of what is being done by a certain institution, then at the end of the day, you know, this confusion will continue. People have, you know, expectations, but they are not seeing anything that is moving forward. Although you will argue as a public official that, no, we are making progress, but you are not communicating to the public. So we have to open up as government institutions to the people for them to scrutinize what we are doing. MPs are not enough. We want all the people of South Sudan also, you know, to contribute in this process of nation building.
Thank you so much, Yenpiu Madit, Rule of Law Officer in working with Amnesia, and also Independent Advocate John Gerry. I thank you both for coming to our studio to explain more about this restoring public trust, strengthening accountability and transparency in South Sudan. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, listeners of Radio Mira.
And with that, we have come to the end of this week's Democracy in Action. My name is Sani Martin. Thank you so much for listening.